I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt. Our colleague Noel is feeling under the weather, but he will be back soon.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. With the help of the biggest celebrity on our show, Paul's dog, Ozu, we are doing one of our favorite things in the entirety of stuff they don't want you to know, and it is sharing your stories with your fellow listeners. This is going to be a listener mail segment that I awkwardly described to Matt and Paul as, whoops, all voicemails. So we've got some that we want to spend particular attention on. In our first half, we're gonna talk about your mind and the ability to perhaps affect the passage of the clouds. We're also going to talk about a situation that is hypothetical for many people, but unfortunately was not hypothetical for a friend of ours. And we are also, toward the end, We're gonna freestyle a little. We're gonna play as many voicemails as we can, the ones that really stuck out to us and hopefully stick out to you. Without further ado, Matt, what say you? Why don't we set this first message up by calling it a "What would you do?" situation?
That's right. This scenario is brought to you by Elrond. Not that one. This one. Here it goes.
Hey, what's up, guys? Love your show. Listen to it for a long time. My name is, we're going to go with Elrond. I had something happen to me related to your ShotSpotter episode, at least a little bit. The other day, I go into a restaurant bar with some friends, and while we're in there, I go to use the restroom, walk in, go into a stall, sit down, and beside the stall and like the toilet paper holder is a loaded gun. It's kind of crazy to find something like this, a loaded 9mm semi-automatic pistol. What do you do in that situation? And obviously the quick answer is, oh, we take it, we unload it, and then we take it to somebody and turn it in and deal with it. Sure, right, that's fine. But in my situation, I actually made some mistakes a long time ago, had addiction issues, which led to me committing a crime, not a serious one, but serious enough that I'm not allowed to have a gun anymore. What do you do in that situation? Do you grab that gun and take it to a cop? What if the gun was used in a crime? And here you are, a criminal, quote unquote, because you are for life, giving a gun to a cop. And also that interaction with a cop, it's complicated. And what if, let's just say it's not me. What if it's someone else? They might be terrified to approach a cop with a loaded gun just to give it to them. So I'm only saying this and I'm only calling him because I'd just like you guys to think this through. Like, how would you handle this situation? And I thought it was an interesting scenario. For me, I did give it to a cop. It was kind of complex. I had to be very careful about how I approached the situation because obviously this same restaurant has kids. They could go in and find a loaded gun. And also this comes back to the whole concealed carry issue. How do you leave a gun in a bathroom loaded? Obviously the person was drunk and obviously that's super illegal unless, again, the gun was from a crime. Anyway, guys, thank you for the time. Just thought this was kind of a good thought experiment. Like, how would you handle this situation? Might be fun to talk about. Keep up the great work. Love your show. Hopefully talk soon. Bye.
Well, there we go. There's the scenario. Walk into a restroom within a restaurant and find a gun. What do you do? Ben, what is your initial reaction to that scenario?
Don't touch it.
Don't touch it?
Fingerprints would be key, et cetera, right? Do your best not to touch it. That's obvious. I suspect, first off, Elrond, you handled this wonderfully at a great personal risk to yourself because you are right. And I think one of the most important things we could say is addiction is a real thing. If you are struggling with addiction, it takes a great deal of personal strength to get to the other side. So there is, you should be immensely proud and we have immense respect for you for doing so. This is not necessarily a hypothetical for me, Matt. So I'm more interested in your take before I TED talk or whatever.
Oh, wow. It's not a hypothetical for you. Okay. All right. Wow. Okay. So I'll just tell you instinctually the way I first thought about this when I listened to this message from Elrond. My thought was, and I don't know why, but it was to clear the gun. See if it is in fact loaded, right? Check that. And then if it is loaded, take out the magazine, clear the chamber so that it's safe for anybody who might show up on the scene, right? And safe for me, depending on who shows up on the scene and what mind state they're in.
Treat every firearm as though it is loaded at all times.
But then I thought, not everybody knows how to clear a weapon. And what if you did it improperly, right? And like there's potential for that weapon to go off anytime you're handling it or touching it. And then I started thinking about the fingerprints issue. And if it really was used in the commission of a crime. But as I started going down that rabbit hole, Ben, this just became more and more and more and more complicated to me. And it really is like, do you walk away from that weapon at all? Once you know there is a weapon at a scene that is in a public space, what is the radius that you allow yourself to get away from that weapon since you know it's there? And I don't think I don't think you go very far away from it, or I don't think you should if you're a responsible person. What do you think?
Right. Is it a situation where you say, well, I'm going to text someone who's with me and say, come here, or call them, right? Someone sitting at the booth with you. If they're the kind of person that you can trust to keep an eye on that situation or go alert someone, is it a situation where you open up the restroom door and try to just yell for an employee, drawing even more attention to the f***ery that's going down? Or is it something where, in some situations here, especially in the West, the Southwest, and the Southeast of the U.S. in particular, oftentimes people will take the firearm and just take, especially if they're at a bar. It happens. You're not alone, Elrond. This happens to many people. This is not my situation, but it's happened to many people where they'll just take the firearm and then take it to the bartender and say, will you put this in the lost and found? You know what I mean?
Along or with just the umbrellas. Hold it up and say, who left their gun in the shower?
Yeah, exactly. Just so, yeah. And this, so it does become complicated because you have to, there are too many unknowns, mm-hmm. right? Too many variables. It could be something as simple as someone who said, I have to drop a hot mixtape, do a number two, and I want to put my firearm somewhere, and then they forgot and they left, right? People are very good at losing things. Human mm-hmm. beings lose stuff all the time. How many people lost their, like what, we've been talking for maybe a couple minutes, not even 10 minutes. In 10 minutes, how many people in this country just left their passport somewhere?
Yes.
One of the most important documents they own. You know, it's not necessarily criminal.
I, you're right. How many times have you lost just your wallet or your keys or something, just misplaced them, especially if you're busy doing something else and it's an object that you always have on you. You're just so used to it being on you. You're so used to it being there. If you put it somewhere just, you know, for a moment to get something done, your brain may just forget that that thing occurred. And if you're, it really depends on how familiar you are with firearms and how often you carry. Like, let's say how often you open carry or concealed carry, because it may just become so commonplace. The way I carry my gun, I place it down when I use the restroom because it's a necessity for me to remove my gun to use the restroom where it is, right?
You don't stay strapped? You don't keep it pointed at the stall door?
That's hilarious.
No one's going to catch me pooping.
Wiping with one hand.
Oh, gosh. No, but I see what you're saying. I think we're of the same mind. We absolutely normalize things. Like a lot of folks do the check, right? It's the thing that Catholic kids use to remember the move where the spectacles, testicles, watch, whatever.
Wallet
and watch. But one of the things, at least when I've been in those situations, to remember, if you find a rando firearm, it does need to be moved. It does need to go somewhere. But, and this is just one paranoid entity's opinion, anytime you are interacting with that, without a witness, without a second pair of eyes, then you are potentially opening yourself up to some very uncool things.
Yes.
So, like Elrond, you refer to this as complicated, and it is. And thank goodness the law didn't try to jam you up or something. You know, what if you touch the gun? What if you touch the firearm, you pick it up without a glove, without any, like, you know, probably the closest thing you would grab is paper towels, right? Mm-hmm. Something like that, some kind of paper product. Well, you pick it up, your fingerprints are on it, and you realize it doesn't have a serial number.
Whoops.
Not a good look. Even if your intentions are good, you know, now you are inherently in some way involved. You are going to lose time. At the very least, you're going to lose time because law enforcement is going to want to know every single detail about how you found a dirty gun.
Right? Well, yeah. Well, and let's say you do that. You take that action, actually touch the weapon. Even if you use a paper towel, even if you had latex gloves just on you for some reason and you picked the gun up, you could still be contaminating potential evidence on that firearm if it was used in a crime, right? So what I want to do really quickly is just give you three places where you can learn more about this and where this was kind of answered pretty succinctly for me. And the first place is on a website called American Concealed, and it's an article titled, "What Do You Do If You Find a Gun?" In this article, it notes that several people have had commented on their site that, yes, I have accidentally left my firearm in a bathroom stall in particular because of this thing that we're describing here. You remove the weapon from your holster to use the restroom. You forget that you did that and you walk out. They recommend a lot of things, and they're really speaking to an audience of people that is familiar with guns, right? So they're showing you, or they're describing to you the best way to do this, and then to get it to perhaps a police officer or to someone who can then report it to a police officer. I probably, for someone not familiar with guns, I would not recommend anything they say on that site, but I would not recommend using that site as your source.
This has some baseline prerequisites, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. To know how to handle a firearm safely, to know how to discharge, clear a gun, right?
Yeah, I
see what you're saying, Matt, but I'm not surprised that some of this advice is exactly what I would have said. I don't know. I mean, it is so situationally dependent. I feel like if you take a photo of it, for instance, in situ, in location, then you need to make sure that you're also immediately following on some other steps. But Elrond's situation, yeah, right, is different. This isn't a vacant apartment building, you know. It's not a squat house. It's not like a place where I used to hang out in my graffiti days or something with crap on the wall and literal crap on the floor. This is a family restaurant. So what a pickle if you leave, right? Mm-hmm. Even if you just take the time to walk to the host station or the bar, mm-hmm, or the kitchen line, if you don't have line of sight on that door, who's to say that a 9-year-old might not just wander in and say, oh, best Christmas ever, right? Like this is...
Yeah, it's worst case scenario right there.
Stuff. Yeah, I'm doing worst case, but I interjected. What's your take?
Well, you're right. That's where my mind goes too, Ben. Another place you can look, there is a subreddit about dumpster diving titled /r/dumpster diving. And on here, there's a quick thread. You found a gun. What now? And on here, you also have some pretty good advice. Again, some of it is just like... supposing that you were going to actually touch the weapon. And this is where I'm going to put a kind of a stop to that. I think no matter what, who you are, no matter how familiar you are with firearms, no matter what your criminal history is, if you've got one or any at all, I think this is the correct procedure because it comes directly from a very high ranking law enforcement officer in a part of Georgia where I've lived. I spoke with this person through email and on the phone today. I'm going to give you exactly what I asked this person and exactly how they responded. Okay. I said, what is the correct procedure for a civilian if they find an unattended firearm in a public space? And I said, I think the obvious answer is to report the firearm to local law enforcement as quickly as possible, but how to go about it safely for both the officer and the civilian seems like it could get complicated. This person responded, the best course of action is to call 911 from where you are. So that moment you have eyes on the firearm, dial 911 then and request an officer to be dispatched to collect the weapon. You can specify that it's not an emergency, but there is appears to be a live weapon and you need it to be taken, right? I asked, if you're familiar with firearms, should you clear the weapon? Answer was no. I asked if you should refrain entirely from touching the weapon in case it was used in the commission of a crime. They said, if at all possible, do not touch the weapon. Stay nearby so no one else touches it as well. Again, that's like more an evidence collection for this thing, potential evidence collection. I asked if the weapon is found in a place easily accessible to children, should you move the weapon to a secure location? Again, the answer here is the best course of action is not to touch the weapon, remove the children from the area if possible, and wait for law enforcement. Which seems like, you know, so those are the official answers, right? They're not official. I wasn't allowed to give you guys like who this person was and what organization they represent, or at least they're a part of. But that is a very high ranking person in a real law enforcement agency. I don't know. I think that's probably what you should do. Or if you're not comfortable calling 911, if someone you know or someone is with you who's comfortable, or maybe a bystander who is also there, maybe have them call 911 to report it.
I mean, I don't know about that too, because they're going to get grilled on how they found it. You know,
I guess that's true.
The thing. Like, what if you do, if you, for one reason or another, can't be can't be speaking with 12, you know, or whatever street name you want to use for law enforcement. There is something else, though, that I think this is the last point I want to make here. If you, people are not stupid. For the most part, given the opportunity to really think about what's going on, people are extraordinarily intelligent. So if you find a gun just sitting on the top of a commode, sitting on the tank or something, then it's less likely that someone used it in a crime and said, you know, here's the perfect place to hide it. TGI Fridays. They have such a terrible reputation because of the cheese stick controversy that they're never, no cops are even going to come here.
Hey, that was just a licensing thing. The frozen TGI Fridays, quote, mozzarella sticks that you can find at your local grocery store are not the ones that TGI Fridays makes in their restaurants. They found that out.
I can't believe it. Of all the organizations, that's the one that compromised our show. I knew it. Not with a bang, but with a whimper. Anyway, no, the old T.S. Eliot there. But the following on that, the natural response is, and look, we have people listening who have had to live on the streets before for one reason or another, right? And there's no judgment there. But you know that if you find a firearm, a serviceable, usable firearm, in a place like a sewer or like a dumpster or some other place where the normal person, the normal civ is not supposed to be looking, then that's probably hot. Not saying it has bodies on it, but it may have been, the odds are higher than zero that it was used in something, you know? So please, Just be safe and know that there are a lot of people who accidentally find themselves embroiled in events, perhaps unfairly, because they were not thinking through the implications. So I want to again thank Elrond here for being fully aware, for doing the right thing, for thinking through it. And without having more details, you know, your mileage may vary, but as long as you can essentially establish a chain of command there, an evidentiary chain, right? A chain of ownership and custody, then you will hopefully be okay. Even if it's something as simple as telling the restaurateur, restaurant staff, you know, I found this firearm. Don't fire it in the middle of the lobby and say, who left this in the shitter? I love that phrase. You can tell them, look, I don't want to be involved. Here's the thing. I found it. But when you say that, you have to know that if pushed, the restaurant staff is going to give every detail they have about you as well. It's a real pickle, and it's a great question. You know, Matt, I'd love to hear other people's responses, because I know that we're not the only folks who have found themselves in a non-hypothetical version of this.
Absolutely. Write to us, conspiracy@iheartradio.com. Also call 1-833-STD-WYTK. Thank you again, Elrond. We'll be right back with more listener mail.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
And we have returned thanks to a sponsorship from our pal Kate Bush. No, I'm kidding. This is going to be something different. This is a lovely message we received from our pal Grady. And Matt, you actually, this one really spoke to me. You spoke with Grady directly. So let's go ahead and play this lovely little message and then let's dive in.
Hey guys, I've called a couple times, but I wanted to discuss something interesting that I've been practicing and that I have also encouraged my friends to practice. And we have all had success in this, which to me, and I'll get into this, but it speaks to the true potential that humans have within them. And I don't know if you guys have discussed this topic before, but it's a practice called cloud busting. And I practiced at this for a while, you know, couldn't find my process. And then once I did, I realized that I could bust, I could make any cloud of my choosing disappear. White, puffy, gigantic clouds disappear. So I call one of my best friends. I tell him about my success with this. And he has an open mind, but he's like, I got to try this for myself. Sure enough, I get a call that night saying, me and my girlfriend went outside and the clouds were covering the moon. And I looked at her and told her, we're going to bring the moon out. So one of my best friends and his girlfriend held hands, and keep in mind the clouds were covering the entire sky, and they were able to dissipate this gigantic cloud and bring the moon out. In short, I know I'm coming to my time limit here. I would like you to do some research into this and just share it with people, because any person can do this by focusing their intention on a certain cloud, finding their process, which can be different for certain people, but it just shows the incredible power that we have as human beings that not everybody realizes is in each and every one of them. So that's all, guys. I just thought it was a really cool thing that maybe, you know, bring up on one of your shows one of these days, but love what you guys do. Amazing stuff. Love you guys. Take good care of yourselves. Loving the book too. Okay. Take care.
Boom. Thank you, Grady. What a ticking all the boxes on a good voicemail. I don't have to, you don't have to say you love this show. That will not influence our choice on what we're fortunate enough to air. But Grady, your message really struck a chord with me. I suspect with you as well, Matt, because we have done a lot of episodes we've done a significant amount of episodes, both in the video and audio realm, on the idea of cloud bursting or cloud busting. And Matt, initial reactions first. I've got to get it from you, man. The people want to hear it. Did you try this as a kid?
Yeah, but see, it was a vape term back then, like busting some clouds, you know? No, I'm just joking.
Right on.
I did try this. It was never about bursting the clouds or anything when I was a kid. It was just more watching the clouds change and evolve as, you know, into different shapes and animals and things, right? As they kind of change shape, because clouds do change shape as they travel and grow and dissipate. I remember learning about this for the first time when we were covering orgone energy. Mm-hmm. And
shout out to Willem Reich.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And attempts to actually create physical structures that would house a particular type of energy that could then be aimed and used to do this same process. But I didn't know you could basically, I guess, meditate in a way, or just focus intention to do the same thing.
Yeah, the idea of, so you're bringing up some excellent stuff here, man. So the idea of busting a cloud with the power of one's mind, right? It exists in a roughly similar school of thought to the belief in rainmakers. The idea that if one concentrates with the right techniques, one can generate storms, right? Generate moisture. And this is a huge part of North American folklore and discourse, and existed way before Europeans were ever on the scene. You know what I mean? There's a couple things to unpack here. So Wilhelm Reich, you know him, you love him. BBC once called him the man who thought orgasms could save the world, mm-hmm. which you'll have to check out our episodes to get what we're talking about. But it's all about that orgone energy, baby. He was a doctor and a psychoanalyst, right? Active all the way up to 1957 when he died. And he believed that he had found a universal energy that could be focused, that could be channeled to create any number of observable physical effects. And he had a lot of followers. One of the things, like, I read about this guy, was different in a different life before I ever thought I would be doing podcast stuff on air. And the thing that always stood out to me about this story, and to you as well, I imagine, is that upon his death, he was entangled with the FBI, had been arrested by the FBI. A lot of his work was destroyed, right? He was profiled, because they accused him of being a communist, a subversive, all this stuff. He was once listed as a key figure on the enemy alien control unit. So whatever he was doing, for one reason or another, Uncle Sam did surveil him, and that lent a lot of accidental credibility to his theories, which remain controversial and widely rejected by academia today. However, there still is an active group of, there's an active institution, the Reich Institute, I believe. So anyhow, he built this machine that you were talking about. And if you look at the machine, the first thing I think we should say is keep an open mind. You know, keep an open mind.
I think with this
mind.
Entire topic, the first thing you have to do is keep an open mind.
Just keep the barn doors of your consciousness open. Send the critical thinking out on a field trip for a little bit and just play what if. So, Matt, you've seen pictures of the Reich Cloudbuster. He designed a thing that he said could produce rain by manipulating this orgone energy, which he felt was ambient already in the atmosphere and in every human being, almost similar to midichlorians, honestly, for Star Wars fans. But how would you describe this Cloudbuster?
Which one do you mean? I know the one that I've seen from the video series we made on this. It looks like a series of tubes almost that are pointed almost turret-like or anti-aircraft gun-like to me.
Yeah.
Which would make sense. And it appears to aim, that's what like focuses and aims the Orgone energy. What I don't understand are the bits that it's actually attached to. Because if I'm recalling correctly, it had something to do with crystals to actually store the energy. Is that wrong?
Right. Metal fillings, crystals, and then a series of flexible metal hoses.
Mm.
Right. And the idea is you aim it at some point in the sky. The anti-aircraft comparison is really apt. You aim it at some point in the sky. And it's weird that he calls it a cloud buster because his goal is to generate clouds, to Ooh. Become a rainmaker, right? The idea of dispersing clouds with the power of one's mind, for Reich, that would be a different that would be a kind of different application of orgone energy. To others, if you're just loosely defining this in the pantheon of psychic powers, this would be a form of telekinesis, right? Atmospheric level telekinesis. And if you do, you can try this at home. You will not be harmed. You know, use common sense. But if you are lucky enough to live in a place that has moderately good weather and Dixie Chicks wide open space somewhere nearby, find a nice day, a day when there are cumulus clouds. Cumulus clouds are the ones that look kind of flat on the bottom. And they got the big cotton candy puff, you know, they sail like brigantine, like ships across the sky. Go there and stare. Pick one, stare. This is a great meditative exercise. You can picture what it looks like because humans are great pattern recognizers. You can concentrate on, in your mind, dispersing it. And if you concentrate long enough, the cloud will move and disperse. The question is correlation or causation.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's an article by Jesse Farrell over at a place called AccuWeather.com who raises the point of observation here. And the point of observation is this. I guess the best way to do it, we talk about this with UAP, right? Most people cannot identify a specific craft in the air, right? You can see something and you can say, that's a plane. And if someone says, oh, cool, what generation and what type and who made it? You'll just say, you know, it's relatively rare. And even experienced pilots, even experienced aerospace engineers might have a tough time discerning a specific type of plane from the ground. A better example would be, have you ever stood next to a traffic light when it's on the ground, when you're not looking at it from your car?
Wait, so the red, yellow, and green ones? Staring at those?
They're bigger than you think if you stand next to them, because you're used to seeing them further away, right?
Mm-hmm. And higher up.
I would also posit, and I've certainly done this, many people, I suspect, spend time focusing on a red light and turning it green, you know, with the power of my mind.
You know how many times I've done that with like a soda can or something where I just stare at it for way too long?
I still do it. I feel like that's a beautiful thing. I will walk into a place that has automatic doors, and mm-hmm. I like to wave my hand like Magneto, you know what I mean? Or Jane Grey. And this is not, this is not dismissive of this. I want to get the AccuWeather thing first, and then let's unpack a little bit more, because there is more to the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
So first, our pal Jesse Farrell over at AccuWeather explains the cloud busting phenomenon this way. Again, we've established, if you go out there and you look, you observe a cloud long enough, you will see it move. You will see it disperse. Jesse Farrell and other meteorologists say this is because the atmosphere up there it simply looks more stable than it actually is from our vantage point. The same way that a traffic light looks smaller than it is, right? The same way it's tough to tell the exact model of a plane. So the atmosphere up there is very windy, it's chaotic, and these puffy, beautiful cumulus clouds are temporary. When you're looking at a clear sky, what you're not seeing is the swirls of temperature, right? The battling differentials of humidity interacting with each other. And Farrell describes these clouds like a leaf on a stream, or they're bubbles in a stream because they're so fragile. So they don't last super long. The clouds that last the longest, the ones you really want to try to bust up if you're deploying atmospheric telekinesis, would be things like thunderstorms. They got more stuff going on. You know what I mean? They're more interesting characters if you're writing for the sky.
Yeah. Well, or if you're in the U.S., you know, the western side of the U.S., you want to make those, like as many as you possibly can. Mm-hmm.
Or what if, okay, cirrus clouds. I love studying clouds. So cirrus clouds are the wispy guys, you know, the little smeary looking guys, and they are much higher in the atmosphere because they have less content, really. You know, the more water you get, the lower you get, right? Mm-hmm. And so those are going to last longer. They might seem harder to bust with your mind, but with all this in mind, I have to ask, Matt, does that explanation from meteorologists, does that satisfy what you're thinking? Like, because essentially what they're saying is, since the atmosphere is dynamic and it's always moving and all things are ephemeral, you're going to stare at a cloud until it goes away, and it might be easy to think that you created that.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree with that scientifically, because the scientific process would take place of that dissipation if you gave it the time. I would say that it's not quite what Grady is saying. So let's get into Grady's process right after a quick word from our sponsor. And we're back. Let's jump into that cloud busting process from Grady. Grady says, I did ask him if he needed orgone, and he said, I mean, who doesn't?
That's pretty awesome. Nice. Nice. Hold on, one for Grady. Extra points.
That's a quote. So then I just asked about the process, and Grady said, you just focus your intent on a puffy cloud that wouldn't dissipate quickly. So he's already taking into account that the cloud is going to dissipate at some point, but he's saying target one that, at least to your understanding or the way you're judging that cloud, it's not going to quickly dissipate observably. He says, be sure to be busting a cloud that won't fake you out, because he's again saying it may fake you out in that it will just dissipate and you'd think, oh, I did that.
Ah, okay, great, great. Yeah, yeah.
He says he tried for the longest time just using his intention at first. And that just, in his mind, that was just, you know, staring at a cloud and in his mind thinking that cloud will no longer be there, right? This cloud will dissipate. He got really frustrated because it wasn't working. He got really, really frustrated, but he didn't stop. He didn't give up. He was able to find a process, he says, that kind of sounds goofy when you hear it, but it's worked for him numerous times. Ben, do you want to describe what he says?
Yeah. So Grady says, you take a deep belly breath. Deep, take your time, and you blow at the cloud while saying the word goodbye in your head, having that as your mantra, goodbye. And then soften your gaze around the cloud, similar to like looking like at the old magic eye posters, I almost think. Mm-hmm. And soften your gaze around the cloud. And he says, this is almost like I was able to trick my psychic muscle into making the clouds start to dissipate. And then he has some more detail about this, something else that happened the first time he tried it.
Oh, yeah. He said, it's really weird, Ben, because it feels like it matches up with, what's his name, dude who does the Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, guy we talked to on the show a while ago.
Oh, Stephen Greer?
Stephen Greer. who uses meditation and intention to summon UFO encounters. It kind of reminds me of that. Because Grady said he saw an orb flying over him that first day when he was able to successfully bust a cloud. Which sounds so dirty, but it's not. It's just you're making a cloud dissipate. I don't know why busting a cloud sounds dirty to me.
I think it's busting. Just busting in general. You could say busting anything. You know, I'm about to bust to Florida over here. It still sounds weird.
Sorry. I feel like I've been 12 years old on these episodes lately. All right. Here we go. Grady does say that the process may be different for everyone. That's just what's worked for him. He did get his friend, one of his best friends, to try it with that person's girlfriend. And they did seem to be able to use that same process and make it happen. Grady's advice to all of us is if this particular process isn't working for you, that Grady has outlined here, just to try experimenting with it.
Right, which lines up with the idea of intention. You know, this reminds me of when we spoke with our good pal Cody. They are a practitioner of chaos magic, and they said had some beautiful things to say about the idea of magic, which on this show we consider weaponized psychology. They said it's really the intention one lends to a thing, the importance one attributes to it in one's mind. And, you know, I think Matt and Grady and all the rest of us, I think one of the best ways to approach stuff like this is to think through how we could best create parameters for a reproducible experiment. And I love that you're doing this, Grady, by going to someone else and saying, hey, you try it, right? Let me case test. Let me see what else happens here. So for instance, I need your help with this, Matt. For instance, if we're building an observable, reproducible experiment to see whether the human mind can dissipate clouds in the atmosphere, then we would need as many things as possible to be the same except for the people, right? So ideally we'd want the same couple of different locations, right? Mm-hmm. In case there was something wonky and unique to one location. We want a couple different locations where we know there's a reliable population of clouds. We would want to know observably the time that they form and dissipate, like what that time span is. We'd want some real-time monitoring of atmospheric conditions, right? We're fun at parties, folks, we promise. And then we would want different people, right? And it's very difficult to control for psychology. But I think maybe the big thing is we want to set up an experiment that gives us the timeline, the lifespan of a cumulonimbus cloud or a cumulus cloud. And then we would want to see if observation interferes with that timeline. Or we could do another thing where you take a place that always has gray clouds and see if someone can think a hole through it, right? A very specific hole, like, hey, we're going to bring the moon out kind of thing and see if multiple people can do that, or one person could do it multiple times, or is observation of the clouds, quote unquote, natural lifespan. Is that like when you try to see if light is a particle or a wave? Is the mere fact of applying human consciousness to it already exchanging, like, you know, messing up the experiment? Okay.
What happens if you focus on the wrong cloud? And instead, Ooh. It's a jean jacket. Huh? Remember that? Remember that movie? Nope. Anyone?
A great film.
Don't focus your intention on one of those things. We have learned. Thanks, Peele.
And should we be busting clouds? What have they done? You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. Just
but bust, wait, I think we've got it, though. Friday. I think we've got the lines that we could do, right? Like, these are things we could do, or someone could do, to really explore this experiment. And I know, Matt, I know both of us don't really enjoy it when folks dismiss something out of hand. So that's why we're careful to say, okay, how could we get our heads around this question, right? How could we see this experiment in action? What are the current accepted scientific explanations? What else is out there? That's the exciting stuff. And I want to hear more people, more people's cloud busting stories. Or if there is anybody who is a practicing dowser or a rainmaker or something like that, that would be amazing to hear. We did a dowsing episode, didn't we, years back?
I think we brought up dowsing on the video, maybe?
Maybe. Maybe we do it in a, yeah. Okay, no, we've given ourselves some homework. And thank you, Gray. I think now we, maybe we wrap up the episode by delivering on our promise. We wanted to play some more voicemails, and we may not be able to dive super deep into all of them, but folks, credit where it's due. Credit is very important to me. Our own Matt Frederick, the one and only Mr. Matt Frederick, has been a beast on these voicemails. And Matt, you found some very interesting stories.
Oh, yes. This message comes to us from, I think she calls herself Oz Woman. I think that's what I'm hearing. It's sometimes a little difficult to understand like the code name of someone when I'm going through these. I believe that's what her name is. And she's responding to a listener mail message that we got from Tone, who was discussing this weird modem noise, or the Tone, so we call them Tone. And she just has some interesting insight, let's say, on a similar situation.
Hi, guys. This is Oz Woman in Idaho. I have a message for Tone. Okay. I, too, heard something weird on my wireless late one night. I was not on my PlayStation. I was actually on my computer when suddenly my computer got hacked. That's almost impossible because I'm a Microsoft engineer with a high level of security clearance. So I keep all of my products at top VPN, top everything. Suddenly my computer is going off and it's not only my computer, it's my phone, it's a couple other things. Well, I called CenturyLink immediately and they traced it. They traced the IP address and we found it was a guy living in my neighborhood, I will say my town, who had brought home a little black box from a three-letter affiliation, and he was playing with it, seeing if he could hack into things, do things like this. And this was right near when those oil platforms got hacked and some other things got hacked. Well, apparently this little black box, that's just what I'm going to call it, was used in a lot of hacking situations overseas. And this guy thought it would be real cute to bring it home from work. My advice to Tone is get a VPN, get a really good one, get Nord, get something, get somebody on the phone. If you begin, call your company. Call immediately customer service. Get some help because I didn't like it. I let this guy's supervisor know that I had a secret or better clearance and that I was pissed. I was ticked. And so my advice is somebody is messing around. Somebody's trying to see what you're doing. Somebody's, yeah, they're trying. They're trying to get in. So my advice is don't mess with this. Get a VPN. And if you ever hear it again, call your provider and tell them that you have been hacked in a major, serious way and that they need to get some people out to help you.
So this is massive. This is someone with experience who is speaking about this stuff. Full disclosure, several VPN services have sponsored this show in the past, including NordVPN. I do think Nord is pretty solid, but also I think this is great advice in general. You know, especially if you were listening to our show in a part of the world where the current regimes may be more oppressive, maybe more Eye of Sauron on you, then you already have a VPN. If you're lucky enough to live in a democratic society or one that purports to be one, then you should probably still have a VPN. And Matt, I know that's something you and I are in lockstep about.
Oh, yeah, Ben, totally. Yeah. VPN all the way, all day, every country. Just be in every country at all times.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the, I wish I could have a VPN for where I'm physically at, walking around like analog, you know, who's that at the Publix? Some guy from Switzerland. So that's a terrible joke, but yeah, we wanted to air this response. I think we have time for, what do you think? Maybe one or two more?
Sure. And for our last voicemail, let's jump to a message we received from Sergeant Williams, who I spoke to as well. Sergeant Williams is an awesome human being. Let us hear this message.
Hey, Sergeant Williams here again. I'm not trying to bug you guys. I'm kind of trying to utilize you guys as my like private research group. But like, here's the thing. So at the end of World War II, with Project Paperclip and all that stuff, don't worry, I'm not like a conspiracy. I'm not like trying to do a conspiracy, but think about this for a second. So at that time, the United States was against the Nazis, right? And then all of a sudden we got a bunch of Nazis. We brought them in to the space program. We brought them into high level positions, like our intelligence agencies. We based it on the Nazi intelligence agencies. Actually, we listened to their top agent, right? To learn about that. So, and then that's when all those experiments started. The LSD, the you know, Tuskegee experiments, all that crap that occurred. That happened after they came over and we put them in charge. And I'm thinking, dude, the Nazis didn't really lose. They just kind of came over and transitioned into the United States. So, if you guys could look into that and figure it out, that'd be cool. That's all. I know it's weird, but anyway, love the show. Love the book. Bought two copies. I mean, I bought the book and then I bought the audiobook. But anyway, love you guys, man. All right, take it easy.
Oh, man. Oh, this is not okay. I don't know if Mission Control is going to let that fly while we were playing that message, Matt. But there's a part where he's like, where Sarge, you were saying, you know, I'm not a conspiracy guy or anything. You know, I was like, I am. because you're absolutely right. One thing a lot of people in this country, in the United States rather, are not aware of is that the powers that be in the U.S. In the lead up to World War II, many of them were huge fans of Nazi ideals. Nazis learned a lot about eugenics from stuff grown on American shores, from horrific experiments and policies in the United States. And the idea that the U.S. modeled some modern iterations of intelligence, both in methods and in organization, from scientists that they had scooped away or from officials they had scooped away makes sense to me, honestly, because God knows the rocket technology was modeled in a similar iteration, right? Applying a similar process. Now, the thing is, for some of the stuff from the Axis powers, like the horrors of Unit 731 in Japan or something, the science they were doing had some value, but it was actually really bad science. It didn't hold up to a lot of rigors, right? But the idea of organizational innovation, right? The idea of creating cells of networks and stuff. You see tactics that work applied across countries, across cultures, across time, like assassination, you know, or like French fries. There's not one restaurant that owns French fries. They just know French fries work for their intended purpose. And I know that's a really messed up comparison, man. I'm sorry, but I'm just, this one speaks to me because you know that I and some like-minded, dare I say, co-conspirators are working on a story coming out January, February, I can't remember, about about this period of time, the interwar years in the United States. It's a story that doesn't often get told to the detriment of the West, and I would argue the world. But what
like, does it have a name?
It does.
Can we say it?
It will be a name we can say a little bit later.
Okay.
But yeah. But hopefully people will enjoy it. We worked hard on it. But this brings me to, God, I'm talking so much, man. I like when you hear Sergeant Williams say, essentially, why aren't more people talking about what the U.S., what Uncle Sam in particular garnered from that regime in Germany? What's your initial reaction?
My fascination goes directly to the intelligence aspect of it. Simply because I was fully aware after our research into the aerospace field here in the United States and the forming of basically a lot of our technology, all of our technology, you know, going to thinking about Huntsville, Alabama and Wernher von Braun and all of that. I knew that. I understood that. I think a lot of people widely understand that. The intelligence angle and side, I'm not aware of. And I can't even confirm right now from, you know, any research of my own. So I want to look into that further, for sure.
Yeah, I think we can both rank it as, if not proven, we can rank it as plausible, sadly. Again, because methods that work will be applied in other fields, right? Wherever they can grant an edge or an insight. And we know that in the world of intelligence, like, don't let the movies fool you, folks. The idea of sleeper agents, especially in an age of surveillance, they're an endangered species. It's pretty tough to pull off. It's pretty easy for them to get burned. And there's not a way to walk them back now, not realistically. But the idea of taking tried and true methods and applying them in intelligence is more about listening, right? So if you can get access to people who are on the inside and say, hey, this is how we did stuff, right? This is how our kitchen worked, then you would be, you would only be competent in applying those methods to your own kitchen, your own restaurant. Yeah. So it's an air fryer,
not a convection oven. Wait, mm-hmm. Isn't that the same thing?
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is your mise en place. Okay. Yeah. All right. Oh, a little sous vide. Let's try that. And it doesn't even have to be necessarily a kitchen analogy. Think of it in the world of manufacturing, right? That's why people hire folks from different companies, you know? Oh, this is how you handle axles and struts, right? Or this is your EcoBoost technology, whatever proprietary name you put on it. Let me learn more, right? Take me into your factory and I'll use those lessons in my own. So this, unfortunately, does make sense. And for anyone who notes how unethical that is, right? How you are quite possibly giving a pass to war criminals, which did happen. The U.S. absolutely did that. So did South American countries. When we think of that, we have to also think of the opposite. What if they didn't take that opportunity to collect that intelligence, to take those lessons learned and improve their methods? It's very dark, very dangerous stuff, but it's a great question. So Matt, I say that it's time for us to call it a day and dig in. I think we've got some homework, man. We've got, this week, just in Strange News and Listener Mail, we ran into some things that are amazing rabbit holes.
Oh, yeah. We're going to cloud bust all the pistols in public bathrooms while investigating our neighbor's little black boxes?
Yes. And we're going to do that all with the help of some friends at a little building in Atlanta that we cannot call a Chinese police station. and we're doing it all to stop a another coup in Germany, etc. So that's our show. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. This has been our Whoops All Voicemails listener segment, listener mail segment. We're going to have more on the way. Keep them coming. We cannot wait to hear from you. Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, all the hits, all the hits. And if you don't sip the social meds, if you want to talk to us directly, maybe get a call from Matt, maybe even me, man. Maybe I'll cross that Rubicon. Then why not give us a phone call?
Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. When you call in, give yourself a nickname and say whatever you want. At the end of the 3 minutes that you're allotted per voicemail, please let us know if we can use your name and voice on one of our listener mail episodes. Those are really the only rules. If you got more to say that can fit in that 3 minutes, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. Bonus points for puns.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax, Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at CedarPoint.com.